Uploading. Tsunami Black Hole Megamix 2K3, now.
The fate of the whole world is in my hands.
You foolish man, I am Ajito Ryo Master. Allow me to reunite you with your ancestors.
There, my Tsunami Generation, and welcome to another episode of Comms Prerogative right here on the Absolution Network. I welcome you once again as I am your fabulous host, Thomas Mattis, and thank you once again for listening to this one-of-a-kind podcast. This week, as I laid mention to at the end of last week's podcast, as a Christmas present to you, which is why I'm releasing it on Christmas, I am covering a movie that is, at least in my mind, and I think can be agreed upon, is responsible for sort of the revival of the stop-motion technique, and that is Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas. It came out, had a lot of fan base around it, it became an instant Christmas classic, it has thousands of fans around the world, and like I said before, can really be tied to the revival of sort of the stop motion because, you know, after this, the studio, which names is escaping me, you know, would go on to create a different studio, mind you, would get the influence to do Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit movie, and they have a new one that's coming out. Of course, Tim Burton would go on after this success and be able to do Corpse Bride and Coraline, and even Robot Chicken, I would surmise to say, probably the reason the Adult Swim executives gave him the go-ahead to do the show was due to the success of these stop-motion movies as sort of a cheap alternative to animation and being successful. But besides all that, it still is a wonderful film, a wonderful musical, because it is a musical that takes a very macabre look at Christmas. It's got wonderful songs, great voice acting, as we'll get into. So, with that being said, let's lay down the synopsis of A Nightmare Before Christmas. The story surrounds the Pumpkin King, Jack Skellington, who has become tired of Halloween, and he wants something more, which I think automatically qualifies him to be considered a Disney princess. Ariel wanted more, Jasmine wanted more, Belle wanted more, Jack wants more. So I think it just qualifies him to fit right in there with those princesses. But anyways, while walking in the forest, gets lost, and he comes upon these strange doors, and he opens one, and it takes him to this strange town full of red and white and snow and little people playing on toys and a big fat jolly man. And he finds out that this is Christmas Town, and he's so splendid and amazed by the town itself and this Christmas that he takes stuff back and he takes back to Halloween Town and he convinces them to let us do Christmas. So he kidnaps Santa Claus, and the whole town bakes macabre toys and twisted toys around it, and he goes off in his sleigh to do Christmas instead of Santa Claus. Well, as it turns out, people don't like his toys, and he gets shot down by the military, which is quite a shock to actually see military in a film actually be useful. I guess maybe it's just my, you know, Godzilla fan talking here. You know, I'm used to seeing the military be useless, so to see it be useful for a change is actually pretty neat. But I digress. But he's shot down and he realizes, you know, he didn't need Christmas to be unique and he didn't need something new. He's the Pumpkin King and he should be happy with who he is. And he goes back to Halloween Town and arrives just in time to save Santa Claus, who unfortunately has wound up into the clutches of the boogeyman, Oogie Boogie, but managed to save him and a young girl who had been trying to warn him that he should be himself and is in love with him named Sally. And he's able to save them, and Santa Claus is able to go off and save Christmas, and Jack and Santa go their ways, you know, celebrating their own holidays, being happy with who they are. And the film ends with this lovely scene of Sally and Jack kissing on this very little twirly hill with the moonlight in the background. It's just a great way to end the film. So the cast for this film was Chris Sarandon, who some of you also might remember as Prince Wuppernick in The Princess Bride, as Jack Skeleton. Catherine O'Hare, who you might remember as the mom in Home Alone, as Sally. William Hickey as Dr. Finkenstein. Glenn Shadix as the mayor of Halloween Town. Ken Page as Oogie Boogie. And Ed Ivory as Santa Claus. So with that, let's get right into my review of Tim Burton's A Nightmare Before Christmas. Overall, I love the music, as I alluded to earlier. So many wonderful songs in this movie, and I'm going to go over them individually. But they also, the unique thing is, again, and this is something that, you know, the musical was doing under the thumb of Disney. All these musicals, whether they be The Nightmare Before Christmas or, you know, Beauty and the Beast, is that the songs, they weren't just great on their own. They all formed together to form the theme that the movie was trying to tell. But again, I'm going to start off talking about the individual songs, and then I'll get to that sort of coming together to form the theme later. First off, the very first song you hear. By the way, one person I forgot to mention when I talked about the cast was Patrick Stewart. Is apparently, from all things I could find, it was in the credits and everything, so it should be true, was Patrick Stewart, yes, Captain Picard of the USS Enterprise. And, of course, I don't watch American Dad, so I apologize for not knowing his name, but the CIA boss. Yes, that Patrick Stewart was the narrator. So, the first song in the movie that we all hear is This Is Halloween, and this is just a fun romp of a song. As you can listen to that melody, it's very whimsical, and its romp, and yet it has that sort of very gothic feel to it. And the lyrics to it, you know, I am the clown with the tearaway face. And I'm blanking on the lyrics, you know. I am the wind that's in your hair. You know, I'm blanking on the lyrics. I apologize. I probably should have had them in front of me, but the lyrics themselves are so wonderful. Just a great sort of rhyming scheme throughout the lyrics. Danny Elfman did a wonderful job. You know, I, for one, am one of those people that actually likes Danny Elfman's work. You know, I loved it in Beetlejuice and Batman, you know. And I love to hear. And the lyrics just, you know, they flow off the tongue when you can remember them. I'm terrible when I don't have, like, the stuff in front of me, so I apologize. But the lyrics, they flow so perfectly off your tongue in this song. And it fits all together. I think one of my favorite lines is talking about, you know, Jack being the Pumpkin King. Again, I'm blanking on this. In reviewing this movie, mind you, I also went and found the Marilyn Manson version of this song, which is, this is when you know you have a great song, when it can be sort of remixed and redone in so many different ways. And I've heard techno versions, I've heard sort of more slow versions, but my favorite is the Marilyn Manson version, which was, I believe, released, done as a special for like a 3D version of the film. And I kind of love this sort of very, that style that Marilyn Manson does. I think it's unique. I'm not personally a big fan of Marilyn Manson, but there's a couple songs of his that I like, you know, Sweet Dreams and Seizure of Power. I just like guitar melodies, and his remix of the song I found to be very, very good. But back to the movie, this is Halloween really, more importantly, puts you in that mood for what this movie, it really tells you the entire story about this town. You know, and again, that's saves time on exposition about this town. You know immediately everything about this town. You know it's this macabre town of Halloween with all these monsters and ghouls and everything, that every day is Halloween. And this is where all the creatures that were afraid of, the boogeymans and all that stuff, this is where they stay the entire year. And they spend all year thinking of how to make next Halloween better. All under under the direction of Jack Skellington, the Pumpkin King. The next song we then feature in the movie is Jack Lament, which I thank my good friend Kyle Young for giving me the name of this, which I confirmed on Wikipedia. But this is a sort of slowdown, and this, again, it tells a great story within the song. I love sort of the sort of sorrow melody of it, because, again, we're learning about, you know, Jack, you know, he's becoming tired of the same thing year after year after year, and he feels his talents are going to waste, and he's, you know, everybody immediately just, you know, appreciates what he does. He's, you know, with no critiques, and he's getting bored with what he does, and this is where he talks about wanting something more, wanting an adventure, shall we say. Again, as I made the joke earlier, I think this qualifies him as a Disney princess when you think about it. It's quite funny to me. I'm sure I had people screaming their heads off at me for suggesting such a thing. But I digress. Again, he wants more. And again, that sort of, Danny Elfman does a wonderful job with sort of this melody that's, it's sorrow yet hopeful at the same time. And it leads him into the forest, which leads us into the next song, which is just a wonderful, again, another whimsical, playful song. And a lot of songs are either whimsical and playful, or sort of have sort of a very serious down sorrow melody to them. But they all sort of have this same macabre feeling around them, which all makes them unique. But the next song is What's This? This is the song Jack sings when he comes to the Christmas town. I almost call it the Santa Claus town, but when he comes to Christmas town. And the thing I think I love the most about this song is just sort of that very innocent, you know, sort of children-esque, which is not a word, but very, very kid-like innocence that Jack Skellington sort of berates as he's, you know, singing, what's this? What's this? There's magic everywhere. What's this? What's this? There's white things in the air. And, you know, he's going and he, you know, this sort of, again, that childlike innocence of him exploring these things and what's this? And just amazed by these things that are beyond him, this joyful scene that's so different from the macabre scenery he's seen for his entire life. And it's wonderful to see him be singing this song as he's exploring, and as he's exploring, he's just, you know, glowing brighter and brighter, which, to an extent, that's sort of the spirit of Christmas growing within him, even though he doesn't know it. But again, you know, that sort of joyfulness and that adventure and him feeling like he's found what he's always been looking for, combined, again, with that childlike innocence, makes this song just such a fun romp. And again, when you learn the lyrics, which unfortunately, again, I have a hard time memorizing the lyrics unless they're in front of me. But again, it's just, they flow off the tongue. And it's one of those songs I enjoy listening to over and over again. The next song, which I actually forgot to put in my notes, but after re-watching about an hour ago, I realized I really should have put it in there, was when Jack gets back to Halloween Town. He brings, you know, things from Christmas Town to show the town. And again, it's another one of these fun, rompful songs, you know, with a rhyming scheme, flows off the tongue. And, you know, it's a box. What, the box, you know, first you take a sock and you hit it up by here. Is there a foot inside? Is it dead? Is it rotten? Is it whipped cream? And it just, a lot of these images that, you know, when you're hearing the lyrics, again, you can see sort of the things popping out. You know, you can listen to the lyrics, and again, that whole foot thing, you can imagine exactly what's happening in the movie, which, again, in that scene, when those words go about, you know, basically the stocking, there's this monster, you know, he's big, and he pops his hat, and there's another monster underneath his hat, and he pops up his hat, and there's another monster underneath his hat. And the words and the way they flow, you can imagine that scene happening. But again, like I said, very whimsical, you know, very playful with the words. And the great thing, you know, again, showing how this town is becoming just amazed at this Christmas as Jack was. Or at least they're, you know, being sold on it by Jack as what Jack's trying to do. You know, showing them we should do this Christmas. The next song, again, it's another whimsical, playful song. And I personally feel it's the better villain song, to be honest with you. And again, I'll get to that. Not that the real villain song is bad or anything, but again, later on, I'll sort of talk about why I feel that way. But it's by Lock, Stock, and Barrel. And it's a Kidnapping Santa Claus. Again, another whimsical song. You know, again, you're hearing this very, again, very child, whereas, you know, what's this had that sort of childlike innocence, this had that feeling of that sort of, like, childlike prankfulness, if I should put, you know, sort of the, I'm trying to think of the word here, and I'm blanking on it, not naughtiness, but sort of that, the prankster, you know, the very childness of, you know, we're gonna do something that may be naughty, that, you know, you know, it had that sort of feeling to that very playfulness for these, you know, basically these trick-or-treat monsters. I love the different ways they talk about, you know, how they're going to kidnap Santa Claus. You know, we should put him in a catapult and fire him away. Wait, no. that might leave parts, and Jack might be mad, and, you know, all the different ways that, you know, they talk about boiling him, capturing him in a cage, hacking him, again, firing him with a catapult, firing a cannon at him. There's just so much playfulness, I think, in that song, and like I said, I think it about the better villain song, because I think, because again, I think it's about as close to villains as maybe we, true villains, I should say, we should get to in this film. Again, I'll get to that later. The next song we see is Making Christmas, and this is sort of like the big town song, very much like This Is Halloween, where they're talking about them doing Christmas. And one thing that I like that Danny Elfman does with this song is there's some Christmas song undertones to it, but then with a layer of macabre, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, da 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 da. And it sort of has the same melody track that you might hear with Christmas songs, but is overlaid with sort of a sort of track that you would hear from a Halloween song. And the Halloween sort of track is, or beat, is a little bit more prominent than the Christmas beat, because you want that Christmas beat underlaid underneath. And it just makes for an awesome song. And again, showing the different sort of evil, twisted presence that they're coming up based off the presence they saw. It's very neat to see. Now we move on to the next song, which is Oogie Boogie's song. Which really is the true villain song, because Oogie Boogie is the true villain. The thing I like this is this song is so completely different from the rest of the film. The rest of the film sort of has this sort of macabre traditional music track. Oogie Boogie's is really just this very fast-paced jazz theme. And it just shows you that right away, this guy is so completely different from the rest of Halloween Town. It's why he's sort of outcast and why he is the villain. You know, it combines sort of the sort of blacklight colors, you know, sort of bright neon greens and reds and everything. It's like blacklight colors. It just makes for a very, very unique look to him. And again, that sort of, that really different sound that's completely different from the rest of the movie, where you have this very upbeat, especially for a villain song, very upbeat, very jazzy song where, I'm the boogie boogie man. And you know, just, you know, telling, you know, the entire song, him telling Santa Claus, you're mine now, and your life's in my hands, and I'm going to have fun with you. Very villainy, even if he really, that's all he does in the entire movie. But we'll get to that. We're on to our last two songs. Sally's song, which, you know, at this point in the movie, you know, Sally had been having these, you know, visions that, you know, Jack's plan is not going to work, and trying to stop him for, you know, save him from himself. And she hasn't been able to do it. And just this song of, like, you know, feeling in the outside, looking in like a complete stranger to the man that she loves. You know, she's, you know, tried to help him every which way she can because she loves him. And yet she feels on the outside looking in like he never sees what she does. Again, like Jack's lament, this is that very sort of sorrowful, you know, a little bit of hope, but overall, it's hopeful that Jack will be okay and that he'll come back safe, but to say that sorrowfulness that, you know, she'll never be seen for who she is, and it makes you really feel for the character. And then we have the really the last true song of the movie, where, you know, this is after, you know, Jack's been delivering presents, and as I said, the police get called, and they call the military, and they basically shoot him down. And this is the part where, you know, Jack, he realizes the mistake, what he does, what he has done. And this is sort of the comeuppance for the character, where he realized, I've done wrong, what have I been doing? And there's that great part of the song. Again, it has the sort of same sorrowfulness that you saw in Jack's Lament and Sally's song. But at the end, it gets a bit more upbeat because it gets to that point to where he realizes, I'm Jack Skellington, the Pumpkin King. That's right. I am the Pumpkin King. And, you know, because as the film goes on, he talks about, like, so what if I failed? At least I tried. And I felt a way I've never felt in such a long time. And, you know, it helps him realize that he doesn't need to be somebody else that he isn't. He just needs to be himself. And he starts to believe in who Jack Skellington, the Pumpkin King, is. Again, which, again, leads to such a great sort of, I'll call it, villain fight scene. As I said, we'll get to later. I keep saying that. I know that's probably annoying. But I digress. But, you know, those are all the songs. And the thing is that they all sort of have an underlying sort of that macabre, gothic horror theming around all the songs. With a little bit of underlay of sort of holiday music. And it really fits this theme of sort of these two completely different holidays of mashing together. You know, it's more of a macabre Christmas rather than a sort of Christmas horror movie, to be exact. You know, a very macabre look at, you know, what Christmas can be, sort of the macabre theming of Christmas, one might say. And again, I just, all these songs, they flow one into another. You know, there's so many little other sort of reprieval songs and everything. And they all just flow into each other. And every song has a story to tell. And that story helps move the movie from each point. You know, this Halloween starts a story, tells you everything you need about Halloween Town. Jack Lament moves from the joy of just celebrating Halloween to his feeling that, you know, he can't, you know, he doesn't feel like he's accomplishing anything anymore. What's this takes him from his sorrow to his joy of finding something that may bring him to who he is, and so on and so on. Each song fits the overall sort of macabre Christmas theme, and at the same time, it moves the story from point to point to point. No song feels out of place. Every song feels just right. It makes for an absolute listen. Again, I'll say it right now, I would gladly buy this soundtrack anytime. I kind of find it sad that I don't already have it. I probably should, but I don't get to buy many CDs. I'm too busy spending my money on comics, video games, and anime. And I don't even get to have that much anymore. Thank God I have Hulu and Crunchyroll. But I digress. Again, the music is just absolutely incredible. So with that, I'm going to move on to animation. Now on to animation. Again, it's one of those things where, again, the overall macabre theme of the movie, it's not sort of horror, but it's that gothic horror that, you know, really is sort of the strange and the macabre. And there's that overall fixture, you know, again, that sort of the feeling of Halloween, but it's not that sort of traditional true horror that we might think of horror Halloween, but rather, again, that macabre and just the way the backgrounds are, the sort of the twists and takes on basically classic gothic horror of, you know, the way the houses are, you know, take sort of Dr. Frankenstein's lab and sort of, it's sort of the classic mad scientist lab, but sort of twisted in just that certain macabre way. Same things with, you know, Jack Skellington's house and the way the town is built. You know, and of course you do have your different mindsets. You have Christmas Town, which again is very Christmassy, and then, you know, the real world. But again, those, mind you, short times we spend in those places are just reprievals from sort of the overall architecture, you know, of where we're based in. And again, these characters, they feel like they really fit into this macabre theme. And again, the unique way all the characters are, which I'll get into in a second, of character design. But I really, again, I just I've always liked Macabre. It's one of those themes that I love. You know, my opinion is that, you know, art and story and everything is on like this circle. And you have your basic story, such as like Beauty and the Beast. And where you decide to take it depends on which sort of spoke of the circle you want to go to. You go on this spoke and you end up at the macabre. You go with this spoke, you end up at more an erotic sort of thing. You go to this spoke, you get a more sci-fi, this spoke, a more Armageddon, this spoke, a more wasteland, this spoke, more happy and joyful, and so on and so forth. And it's these different sort of paths that you can take a story. And Macabre is one of my favorite ones because I just sort of love the sort of, you know, just joyful, not joyfulness, but there's a certain amount of fun of like, how twisted can I make this? What's a way to twist this concept around? Like, you know, you have that demon that's walking through the movie, and that idea of instead of having this demon fly, he's using his wings to walk. And he's just hanging there, and it's a very strange, and again, macabre look. Again, I'm getting the characters, and as I was saying before, you know, the different houses and the background, and I think nothing characterizes this more than probably the signature landscape of the movie, the twirly little hill. It's different, and the way it's sort of feels alive, goes toward that strangeness and that macabre feeling, especially once, you know, Jack's walking down it. With that, I'm going to move on to character designs, and we're going to start off with Jack Skellington. I love Jack's design. You know, I think the sort of vertical black and white stripes of his suit, you know, make him seem even skinnier, which is amazing. But again, you know, he feels like, you know, he has a lot of charisma with him. But again, he's that sort of tower. You know, he's obviously probably like the tallest character of them all. And the way he sort of towers over everybody, you know, you can understand that sort of, you know, impressiveness and how everybody sort of looks up to him. But again, sort of that, I love sort of the fact that his suit is that black and white vertical stripes. I feel that goes just perfectly well with how he's designed. I mean, he's basically a skeleton for all things said. But again, you know, the sort of flare on the back where the little feathers, I think it's perfect. He's one of my favorite designed heroes of all time, to be honest, because it's just such a unique design. And, you know, sort of, again, that sort of height of his makes him such a well-defined character. Let's move on to Sally. Sally, the best way to describe her, I guess, you know, Bride of Frankenstein, you know, a Frankenstein monster that's, like, sewed together and everything. And, you know, constantly she's losing limbs and she's having to sew herself together again. I'm not going to go there because that's wrong. And people are going to say, I knew he was going to go there. Wow, there's really no low he'll stoop to. But there's a certain beauty to her that makes you feel for her character, you know? I think it's the color scheme. It's also the outfit. The outfit sort of like different patterns. She comes off, I want to say, very doll-like. Which, you know, makes sense because really that's what she is. She is a doll. There's a certain amount of innocence in her design, you know, which really helps when, you know, she has those more sorrowful moments, you know, where she feels weak. And, you know, in her design, it, you know, makes her look even weaker. You know, it really fits, you know, what they're trying to do with her. You know, she is this doll. She is this person who's trapped in this tower of this mad scientist. And, you know, always trying to get away. And her ability to take off limbs and use them in different situations and being able to sew them on. And seemingly having, like, doll stuffing, mind you. I mean, again, I love the idea of this sort of Frankenstein doll monster. And I think that's incredible. Let's move on to who is basically the villain. Oogie Boogie, who probably has the least amount, outside of Santa Claus, has the least amount of time in this movie. I mean, you see Oogie Boogie at certain points as a shadow, but when you finally see him, he's basically this sack of bugs that sort of looks like sort of that classic ghost. And I like that idea of, you know, this sort of classic-looking ghost that's really a bag of insects being the boogeyman. You know, because he can be anywhere and everywhere. I think Ken Page's voice is the perfect voice, mind you, for this design. But again, it's just that very, very ranched look, you know, especially when you're looking inside his mouth or, you know, one of his seams are coming undone. But for Oogie Boogie, just this boogeyman, just to be this sack of bugs, and he's this big, you know, fat sack of bugs, you know, I feel it's such an interesting choice, because again, all the characters in Halloween Town, to an extent, an exception with, you know, a couple of them and, you know, the mayor, but even who, what I'm getting at is, like, they're big, but even them, they're, like, big and short. This is a very, very big, very well-rounded person. You can see why he's probably, like, the only person who's possibly able to rival Jack Skellington. I just wish there was more in-depth to the story behind his and Jack's rivalry. You know? Yeah, I mean, you could tell from their interactions with each other that there's, like, a rivalry there. But again, that's getting more into story. But again, you know, sack of insects, it's an interesting design because I feel like it's so different from what the rest of Halloween Town is. The rest of Halloween Towns are these concrete things that have form. You know, they're creatures. They're I'm blanking on the word, and I apologize. But you know, they're like figures, and they're real things. You know, you open them up and things may come out, but, you know, they're still this one singular form. Oogie Boogie, again, just being a sack, can be any form in anything. You know, again, it's why he's the boogeyman. On to Dr. Finkelstein, which I love this sort of little short, wheelchair-bound mad scientist who keeps getting knocked out and to sleep by Sally. He just makes me laugh. And again, he's just this great play on sort of the classic mad scientist in a wheelchair, you know. And, you know, he's another Frankenstein monster. I find that to be a great idea to sort of design this mad scientist as basically this Frankenstein monster who's like, can open up his head and touch his brain and take his brain out and put it into something else and everything. I found that to be really neat. Again, his design, especially his head, came off as, you know, again, just more science-based, more, you know, more engineering of science, especially the fact that it can open. With that, I'm going to move on to Santa Claus, or as he's called through most of the film, Sandy Claus. I really, you know, again, I think it was smart of them to stay to a basic sort of design of Santa Claus. That's very traditional look of Santa Claus. Because, again, the whole point is the first time we see him is that silhouette. And it's, you know, Jack, you know, going off what his idea of what he thinks it is. And then when you see him, again, he's this very traditional, you know, that Santa Claus that stands out from the rest of Halloween Town. And so, it really just adds to that sort of Christmas in the macabre feeling, you know. And him being scared and wondering, what are we going to do, you know. But again, like I said, I love the traditional design. I think it works perfectly because, again, it makes him stand out from the rest of Halloween Town, and it shows you really just how twisted they're making Christmas, I think. When you compare, when you see him in Halloween Town surrounded by, you know, Jack in a Santa suit, and, you know, all the other characters with, like, Christmas stuff, it really sort of points out just how much they've twisted Christmas in their view. And I'll just go briefly over, like, some other minor characters. I love Lock, Stock, and Barrel as, at least design-wise, as these little trick-or-treaters. I think that's very unique to have these sort of, you know, minions of Oogie Boogie being, you know, him being a boogeyman, for them to be basically these trick-or-treaters. And then, of course, the town mayor who, you know, with the spinning face, you know, just an absolutely incredible idea designed for him. You know, when he's happy, he has that happy face. And then when he's sorrow and sad and worried and everything, he has the other face that just spins around. You know, he's just like this very poignant, you know, very triangular, very, you know, blocky, you know, very much like a politician. So I thought that felt very well. Last point with animation, and I talked about this a little bit before, but the backgrounds. The backgrounds are absolutely stunning. They did a wonderful job. Again, the my favorite, which is probably a lot of people's favorite, but the Twisted Mountain with the moon in the background, absolutely wonderful. Christmas Town, you know, when Jack's first on that ledge and he's looking down and you see everything that is Christmas Town. It's not just the village, but, you know, the sky up above, and it just feels like those classic Christmas stories that you read, like basically the art you will see in the picture books of something like 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, or, you know, Rudolph is Coming to Town. And as I said, I just love the way the buildings are just designed. And then, you know, I'd be very interested to figure out when this tale takes place as far as what year in our time it's supposed to be. Because, again, it almost feels like it's 1950s, 1960s, something like that. But I thought they did a wonderful job when he's in our, you know, world, displaying this sort of, like, sprawling metropolis or suburbs, for that matter. I think that's a piece of the film that gets unnoticed, is sort of when he's in our time and sort of the military and the cannons, which are very well designed, and how the sky is, and it feels Christmassy, yet it feels Halloween at the same time. So I thought that was just a wonderful job, background-wise, by the entire staff for the entire movie. I mean, they're absolutely incredible, and I just love watching these movies and trying to see what I can find new in the background, because there's always something new I find in the background. And I think that makes for a great movie. Again, not that these things jump out and take you out of the movie, but again, if you're just focusing on the background, you know, I'm always finding something new. So with that, let's move on to story. And the basic overall theme of this movie is to be yourself. I know you must have played Isn't the Macabre of Christmas, and it's that, but there's also a deeper theme in this movie of being yourself and celebrating yourself. And again, in this movie, you know, when it starts, Jack, you know, he feels like nobody, not that nobody appreciates him, but he doesn't feel anything special from what he's doing, and he feels he's not special. Again, I keep making a joke, but he wants more. I actually did have a, like, sort of, like, twisted Nightmare Before Christmas version of Part of Your World, like, retuned, but I'm gonna save you the terror. I've already terrorized one podcast with a singing of a certain giant Tokyo monster done to Vanilla Ice's Ninja Rap. And I'm not going to torture more people with that. But, you know, again, he wants, you know, he's looking for something bigger. He's looking for something more, something to make him basically feel alive again. Because, again, he's doing the same thing every year, and, you know, he's always praised. He's always the top scare and everything. He's the pumpkin king. And it's kind of that thing of, like, you know, once Halloween's over, what does he have left until next Halloween? And so he's looking to feel important, feel like he means something through that meantime. Which, again, leads him down the road to finding Christmastown. And, you know, he so wants to be, you know, I don't want to say noticed, but because he's not looking to be noticed, but he's looking for that sense of, you know, of being alive. You know, it leads him to, you know, finding this Christmas and wanting to be this Christmas. You know, one of the scenes I love is, you know, he's reading all these books and he's reading Rudolph and all this stuff, and it's like, I must find a way to figure out this Christmas. So he opens up this book of scientific method, and I just find it absolutely funny, because again, that leads to his downfall. He's trying to understand Christmas, so he's trying to understand it in a scientific method way, and he's trying to use science, and he comes to part of the conclusion of what Christmas is, which is, just because you can't explain it doesn't mean it doesn't exist or everything, but really, you know, just, and this is sort of the great thing about what Halloween Town is, and really what the macabre is, you know, just missing the mark. And he sort of gets the feeling of Christmas, but he really doesn't get what the spirit is about. And, you know, he thinks it's just about presents, but he doesn't understand why you give the presents. He thinks it's about stockings and candy canes, but he doesn't know why you eat candy canes and, you know, put things in stockings. He just knows that's how Christmas is celebrated, and so that's what you do. It's sort of very reminiscent of sort of the commercialism that is, and that's maybe another unique thing to also say, is that it can also be a metaphor for sort of how we tend to a lot of times only look at the commercialism of Christmas and sort of forget what the spirit of Christmas is. Because, and I say that because, again, this movie, you know, was based off poems written by Tim Burton, being inspired by, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and sort of those classic Christmas cartoon specials. So you have that, but again, missing the mark and, you know, thinking that I'm going to do all this stuff and it's going to make me alive again, but when he realizes, and this goes into our second point, the lesson that Jack learns, when he's shot down and he realizes, you know, he feels sad for what he does, but as he's feeling sad, he realizes, but wait, I did something I wanted to do, and I feel alive, and he realizes, to an extent, you know, it's not the Christmas, or doing the Christmas stuff that made me alive, it was me being me that made me feel alive, and I should be proud of the Pumpkin King, and that's what helped allow him to do what he really, you know, to be alive again, was being himself. So, it allowed him to realize his mistake just in time, and they saved Christmas. But I think that's a great lesson to learn, that it's you who makes you special, not what you do, or the job you do, or anybody else around you. You make yourself special. And it is an important lesson that I think a lot of people take very lightly in our world today. You know, you yourself make you special. It's something I cherish all the time. I feel I make myself very special by being who I am. Not that I'm better than anybody, or that I'm faster or smarter or any of that, but I know what makes me unique is that I'm always myself. And that's basically the lesson that Jack learns, is it's not Christmas or Halloween that makes him special. He makes himself special. And what he's good at is Halloween and scaring, you know. And so he realizes his mistake and, you know, ends up saving the day. But talking about saving the day, let's move on to the final talking point. And this is really the one critique I have of the film. And that is that there really isn't any real villain. Oogie Boogie is technically the villain, but as I was talking about earlier, a lot of times I just feel like Lock, Stock, and Barrel are the real villains because they're the ones that kidnap Santa Claus. And, you know, when Jack tells him, make him comfortable, you know, is what's more comfortable? Oogie Boogie! Yeah, they really do the work. And more importantly, I also sometimes feel like Jack's the villain. You know, because really, he's the one doing villainous things. Even though he doesn't understand he's doing villainous things or wanting to do villainous things, you know, he's the one who's, you know, a lot of times, especially when, you know, he has this sort of evil laugh, evil sort of mad scientist laugh, makes me feel like he's more the villain. And to an extent, he is, because really, he's the villain to himself. It's his brain and not understanding that, you know, he needs to be, you know, it's him that makes himself special, you know, thinking that there needs to be something out there that makes him special. Because again, it's a large part of Jack trying to get that feeling back. So to an extent, he's a villain upon himself. But, you know, Oogie, I guess my main reason why I don't look at Oogie Boogie as a real villain is, yeah, he's sort of the bad guy who's trying to basically off Santa and Sally at the end, but he really doesn't do anything. You know, he doesn't go out and, you know, take Santa Claus from Lock, Stock, and Barrel. They send Santa Claus to him, to his, you know, base underneath their house. You know, really, what did he do other than Santa Claus and was there and was sent to him, and he does what he does best. He plays games of chance to where, you know, he basically admits, I'm going to cheat, and I'm going to kill you. You know, I mean, do you see what I mean? He doesn't really do anything. You know, he doesn't take initiative to kidnap Santa Claus. He's sent to him. You know, he captures Sally trying to trick him, which is what leads to them doing that. He's the bad guy. He just doesn't feel like a bad guy because he really doesn't do anything. You know, yes. Killing Sally and Santa Claus is doing something, but it's not like that was his evil plan. He was just doing what he normally does with stuff that's sent to him. He toys with it and destroys it, basically. But it does lead to a very, very wonderful final fight scene. And yeah, my favorite part of that scene is when he thinks he's dumped him basically into the hot boiling oil. He says, wait, something's wrong. And he flips back over to basically the thing that Santa Claus and Sally were laying on. And there's Jack like, hello, Boogie. And I just think it's such a great scene. So, overall, that's it. Again, I love this film. This is a very, very wonderful film. I actually don't get to watch it as much as I do because the past couple of years, I've been stuck doing a lot of things, but I always watch this during Christmas, and it's always fun to watch, you know. I have the DVD. Of course, now they have the Blu-ray and the 3D 5-pack out now. So if you have a 3D TV, I was just getting that. I really would like to see this in 3D. I hear it's great, but I have the special edition DVD, which has a lot of great little extras on it, mind you, like the Frankenweenie short and the behind-the-scenes look at the Haunted Mansion, which in Disneyland, the Haunted Mansion is like taken over by the Nightmare Before Christmas for a couple months, for like November and December. And a lot of great extras, and I found the commentary to be absolutely spectacular from, you know, Henry Selick and some of the animators. You know, because again, the animation, and I didn't talk about sort of the smoothness of the stop motion, but the smoothness of the stop motion is just absolutely incredible. It You know, Tim Burton's stop motion animation, it has such a unique style. It's so smooth, and I absolutely love that. It gives a sort of very natural, organic feeling to the animation that, again, it's something so unique. So, again, this is an absolutely incredible film. I say it's a must for any animator, or should I say animation fans, you know, collection. And overall, you know, 5 out of 5. Must watch. So, Nightmare Before Christmas, Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas, that's my prerogative on that. Now, onto our usual things. First off, you want to let me know what you felt about my review of Nightmare Before Christmas. You can drop me a line on email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can leave a comment in the post section. Still don't have iTunes up, but I hope to have it by the start of the year, I hope. I can't promise that. I'm very busy in the next week. Remember to check out all the other 132 productions. And of course, check out the Otaku Momentum. And I only have one episode, but I hope to have a second one in coming weeks of Mice and Giant Robots, you know, which you can find, in, of course, up right now are my holiday special, my annual holiday special is up on the site right now, so check those out. Of course, check out Tokyo SOS, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. That's where I do my Godzilla podcast, Tokyo SOS, where we are reviewing every Godzilla movie ever made. And this month is my solo review of Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. And, of course, Comic Book Crazy, where you can find my Comic Book Crazy podcast and Hexcast. And you can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. Of course, check out all my friends that you can find on the sidebar site, like Major Spoilers, Views from the Long Box, Spider-Man, Crawl Space, and others. And this is the part where I usually tell you what's coming next week. Well, I'm taking a 2-week vacation. This episode's I kind of kept pushing it back and had the bright idea, why don't I just release it during Christmas, which is when this is being released. But, you know, I'm taking a 2-week vacation. As I look at my calendar right now, my plan is to come back with an episode on the 10th of January. And I kind of make mention of this in the very first episode of my, you know, holiday specials that I'm doing this year. But on the 10th, I finally do my review of Gundam Wing. This has been an anime I've been wanting to review for such a long time. It's the anime that defined Toonami, as far as I'm concerned. And 2-week review. First week, Gundam Wing, the series. Second week, Gundam Wing, Endless Waltz. Also in January, I'm going to be reviewing my first, you know, anime that's not been licensed in America yet, but you can find on sites like Crunchyroll, and that is what I consider the 2010 anime of the year, and an anime that really should be licensed, by the way. Stan Lee's Hero Man will be this third week of January, or basically fourth, and then the last week, I'm covering the first season of the new Thundercats, which I have all the episodes on DVR, and I can't wait to rewatch those again, because if you follow me on Facebook, which you can find at Thomas Mattis, or, you know, follow me on Twitter at Mattis Leanhart, you know that I consider that the new Thundercats series is the best American animation series since Batman the Animated Series. Which, yes, I know that's like a big, tall order for somebody to say, but, you know, there's a reason I say that. And you'll find that out when I review the first season of the 2011 Thundercats series. And then I have a lot in the coming year. There's so many great reviews coming to give you sort of a preview. I have a couple of very special months. In February, is going to be Disney month. Everything is going to be a Disney movie. In April, again, because of summer season, and of course we have superhero movies, April is superhero month. And I'm going to be covering, for the most part, American superheroes. For one, I'm going to cover the Wonder Woman animated movie, Batman, Superman, Apocalypse, Spectacular Spider-Man Season 1, just at least three of the shows that I know that I'm going to be doing that month. That's in April. In June will be Mech Month. Last year I had it in May. This year I'm having it in June. All mech reviews. That's one I try to have every year. And those are what I have planned right now. I have lots of shows I can't wait to review. So here's hoping to 2011. Because again, I'm going on a 2-week vacation. So I wish all of you a happy new year. And here's hoping that you guys will help me make 2012 an absolutely wonderful podcasting year. Hopefully better than 2011 has been for me. But thank you for listening to our show. And until January 10th, where I finally review Gundam Wing, folks, I hope you have a happy new year, my Toonami generation, and stay golden.
A cursed samurai. You have succeeded again in eluding my effort, but I am not worried, for one day you will fail.
By DJ Clark Nova. Don't sleep on it.